You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. It's been 6 weeks now since California Governor Gavin Newsom issued a stay-at-home order to curb the spread of COVID-19. Since then, we've all been adapting to what has become our new normal and dealing with the complex feelings this new reality inspires. Author and former Fresno Bee columnist Armin Bacon is known for exploring her emotional life through her writing. She spoke to me from her home in Fresno about navigating our emotions in this strange time and the ways our reactions to COVID-19 resemble the grief process.
First of all, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for talking with us. How are you and your family doing?
Well, thanks so much for asking. You know, we're actually doing fine. Everybody's healthy. This is all so new and counterintuitive for us. We're people who like to hug and be close to our family and to our friends. And so it's all kind of a strange new world. But like everyone else, we're following the rules. We're sheltering in. We're being very vigilant about hand washing and social distancing and coping with this new abnormal, is what I prefer to call it. We have two New York doctors in our family, my sister and her husband. So from the very onset, we've taken this very seriously. We're trying to do our part to flatten the curve, and we're especially grateful for all of those people who are on the front lines risking their own lives in order to save ours. So there's a lot of emotions right now, and we're just hoping that we get to the other side of this, having learned some lessons and maintaining our health.
Absolutely. You know, there was a widely shared interview with grief expert David Kessler in the Harvard Business Review that was titled, "That Discomfort You're Feeling is Grief," in which he applied the stages of grief to this collective response that we're having to the pandemic. As someone who's written extensively about your grief journey following the death of your son, I'd love to hear your thoughts about our collective grief in the time of COVID-19.
Well, you know, I read the article too, and he had lots of very significant insights. For people who don't know, he does refer to the stages of grief, which there are five traditional ones: denial, this isn't really happening; anger, which in our case now, anger over canceled plans, over people getting sick, over, you know, maybe there's not going to be a graduation or a wedding has to be postponed. The third stage is bargaining. The fourth is depression, and he says the fifth is acceptance. What I loved is that he's added a sixth stage, which is finding meaning, which I think, you know, I'm huge on that. I'm trying to look back and, you know, is there a teachable moment in all this that we will emerge better and not bitter from this experience? It's interesting because this pandemic is delivering a multitude of griefs and lots of grief triggers. It's not just human loss, which of course is the largest grief we can experience as a society, but there's grief over job loss, over loss of the normal life we're accustomed to living, the grief about not knowing when this is going to end, and there's the loss of that human connection, again, not being able to wrap your arms around the people you love and not being able to be close to friends and be next to each other and making eye contact. And I think that makes us all very sad. That triggers a lot of grief. I call it complicated grief, because it's not just brought on by one thing. It's lots and lots of layers, which then requires us to be very mindful of how we're feeling and to take extraordinary care of ourselves, because it's very easy when all of this is happening to slip into that hopeless rabbit hole. And I know what that feels like. And it's, you know, I mean, it's a natural, I think, thing to do, but collectively, it can cause us great harm. So there are lots of things I think we should be doing to help mitigate that.
You know, I'd like to come back to this idea of grief and hear some of the thoughts that you have about the gifts that it has to offer us. you know, grief isn't something that we often talk about as a society, but it's something we all experience. And you have written that grief is something that is both defining and transformative. What do you mean by that?
First of all, grief, almost any kind of grief, I think changes us on a cellular level. You're never the same after you've experienced profound grief. In our book, Griefland, I wrote, walking through the fire will either melt or illuminate you. And ultimately, I think it does both to us. It can make us more human. And there are some griefs. I think it makes us realize how precious and fragile life is. So it gives us this appreciation for being alive and for having each other. Already we have seen so many higher levels of kindness and compassion, you know, people donating their plasma after being sick on their own deathbed, people donating services and money. I say that it's transformative because I think it helps us laser focus on what matters most. I think that people are rethinking their priorities. I think we are all rediscovering our most basic human needs of family and shelter and food and taking care of ourselves. I think that there's a beauty in the simplicity that we're all having to return to, and a raised consciousness about how precious and fragile life truly is. We had grown accustomed, I think, to living in this rush hour of our digitized life and navigating life at light speed. And all of a sudden, many of us have time on our hands. So it's a beautiful time for reflection about thinking, who is the person I want to be and what changes do I need to make in order to find that person and rediscover her? And the goal, I think, for all of us at this point is not only survival, but resilience and finding a balance in our day and in our life. So keeping connected with the people we love and care about, even if we can't be wrapping our arms around them, but we can certainly be reaching out to them. We can be talking to them by phone or through technology, and then taking good care of ourselves, making sure that we're eating healthy, that we're getting some exercise, and that we're staying centered and balanced.
That's such good advice, now more than ever, but really at any time. So I'd like to talk to you a bit about emotions that we all are feeling. So I personally had a moment recently where I got really angry about something that normally wouldn't bother me at all. And when I sat with that feeling, I realized that the emotion that was fueling my anger was actually sadness. Both for how this pandemic is changing my life, but also for all the other people that are hurting so much more than I am. And what I came to realize, I think, is that because I'm so fortunate to have shelter and food and can continue to work and be productive, I hadn't allowed myself to feel the full range of my emotional response to this moment. So I guess my question to you is this: because I have so much to be grateful for, do I even have the right to be sad?
Well, of course, the answer to that question is yes, but let me just back up a little bit by reminding us all that we're kind of falling into two groups. There's the one group that this crisis is just sucker punching. I mean, it's the people who don't have shelter, who don't have food, who are struggling because they are ill. Maybe they're in the hospital or they have a family member who is critically ill. And we see that group. And then there's this other group. And I think both of us fall into this group. We are able to work remotely from home. We do have shelter and food. We're reasonably healthy. And so we feel a little guilty about complaining about this. And the reality is, first of all, it's not business as usual for any of us. So we all have a range of emotions that we're trying to work our way through. And the most important thing, I think, is that we have to acknowledge the feelings. They're real. And it's okay for you or me or anybody to be feeling sadness or anger or feeling out of sorts. my advice would be, you know, try not to get too far out in front of the day, projecting onto next year. I have friends who are worrying about next Christmas. Gosh, I wonder if I'm going to be able to host the holidays. And it's like, no, 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 let's reimagine normal in the present tense. And already, I mean, believe it or not, we've all made some pretty significant adjustments. And I think we're doing pretty well. We're finding substitutes or equivalents for the time being anyway, for seeing our friends, for seeing our grandchildren, for getting exercise and doing meals. Instead of going out to dinner, we're staying at home and reinventing, you know, family cookbooks and going through old recipes of ours. So the biggest thing is, I think we need to get up every morning, make a plan, get dressed. And, you know, here's my mantra. I get up every morning and I whisper to myself, today I'm going to give the world the best I have to offer. And that may mean checking in with my aunties and uncles, my elders. That may mean calling my girlfriends. It may be sitting down with my husband and having a real talk about what the rest of the week looks like and make sure he's doing okay. Or baking cookies and delivering them in the neighborhood, leaving them on doorsteps. I mean, everybody, I think this is a time to find purpose and to also rekindle whatever passions we have, because most of us have a little extra time. And so if you're a musician or an artist or a painter or a writer, this is your time to spend a little more energy on that. But it's okay to be feeling all those emotions. And I think it would be not so normal if we weren't feeling them.
So before we wrap up, what are the lessons you think this crisis might offer us?
Well, I think for me, the biggest lesson is that it's our lives don't have to be filled 24/7. That quiet time is time to be appreciated and relished. I have revisited music. I'm reading more books. I'm just being more mindful of my own self. And I think some of us busy ourselves to avoid looking inside internally and taking stock of ourselves. And so I've spent a lot of time thinking about what changes I want to make in my life. And, you know, for the longest time, I said, I'm going to be walking in the neighborhood because I work out in a gym usually. And finally, this pandemic has forced me, because I can't go to the gym, to get outside and walk and find the beauty of the trees and the flowers and the insects that are all around us. And so I'm learning that simple is sometimes better, and that quiet is sometimes better than noise, and that staying at home and cooking and taking my time chopping vegetables is better than going to a restaurant. And I have forgotten all those things. And so I'm just, I think, more aware of life's beauty and simplicity and getting back to basics. I know my mother, when she was living, always used to talk about her family's victory garden and how beautiful it was watching vegetables grow. And it's like, a vegetable garden, what a novel idea. Mm-hmm. And so I think where I'm returning, I mean, you know, I'm also pulling out all my mom's old Armenian recipes. And I'm doing a FaceTime once a week with my sisters and my nieces and my daughter. And we're all cooking kind of the old fashioned way and sending each other pictures and kind of encouragement. And it's lovely. And that's something we really never used to do. And so I think we're reinventing ourselves. And that's not something I really thought I would be doing during this juncture or this chapter of my life. And I'm enjoying it quite a bit. So I think there are lots of lessons that we can all learn from what we're going through right now. And some of them are painful and some of them are simple and beautiful.
Armin Bacon, it's been a joy talking with you. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And please take good care of yourself. Keep washing your hands and social distancing. But I look forward to seeing you in person one of these days soon, I hope.
As do I. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Kathleen. Thank you.